It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Tween girls today are the same as tween girls from previous generations. They play, they hang out with their friends, and they're at a point in life when they're starting to figure out who they are.
The difference is a lot of their lives now take place online. And social media isn't a separate reality for them, it's just another part of reality.
Our next guest says, we often talk about tween girls, but we don't talk to them. So she decided to see what these girls had to say about their social media use, the role it plays in their lives, and if, like so many adults, they also see it as a harmful influence.
Catherine Phelps is the author of the new book, Digital Girlhoods, and teaching faculty in the Gender and Women's Studies Department at UW-Madison. Kate, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a delight.
There's a lot of talk, as you talk about in your book, in the media about young girls, the tween girls, and how they interact with social media. A lot of talk about them.
Yes.
You did something a little different. You went and talked to them.
I did.
Why was that such an important part of your research?
Well, and I think rightfully so. It is difficult to access that population of people, that demographic of people, but it really struck me how much public discourse and what felt really very much like panic was happening around girls in online space, and very specifically around this demographic of younger tween girls who are making their foray into these social media spaces and platforms. And I felt that the narrative that we were painting on the part of adults was perhaps not very nuanced. It was a little too simplistic. And I just was like, I need to talk to this group of humans and find out what they think about social media. So I had to be very intentional and careful about the kinds of questions I was crafting in interviews. But what I found was that girls really wanted to talk about it. They wanted the opportunity to share about this thing that they had been introduced to, that they were growing up with, and that was shaping their lives in really profound ways.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that struck me as you share examples, of course, anonymized from the girls you talk to. I think sometimes in the popular press and culture, we think of kids just sort of blundering into this online world thoughtlessly. They really do think a lot about what they see and what they share online, don't they?
They do. They are strategic, savvy social media users. And I was so privileged to get the opportunity to speak with many of them, certainly. And it's not a massive study in that way. I talked to 26 tween girls between the ages of 10 and 13. But what I found was, over the course of doing these interviews, this saturation point where I'm hearing a lot of shared themes. They care so much about privacy, but they're also balancing that with this call to be visible and wanting to represent themselves.
That balancing act keeps going throughout your book, and you look at two conflicting pressures, the idea of girls this age, and other ages for that matter, as innocent girls that need protection, right? And you mentioned the worries about privacy and strangers and concern about that, versus a societal pressure to embrace a kind of girl power.
Yes.
To say, hey, you need to craft your identity. You need to show the world who you are. Those are not the same things. They are mutually contradictory.
Yeah.
How did girls talk about that?
They talked about that dilemma often in the very same breath. Girls understand very much they have been conditioned to fear this specter, in particular, of the strange man online, this predator that looms, you know. And to me, what's so striking about that is that we're putting so much responsibility on a 12-year-old and saying this person needs to pull themselves offline, or we need to protect them from being in online space because of who might be watching them, which I think needs to be a totally reframed conversation about how we have situated girls throughout history, in media, in popular culture and these very competing demands that we put on them. It's really hard to be a girl. It's very confusing.
I want to dig more into that in a minute, but I want to stay with some of the practical ways that girls are using social media. There are things where you're kind of broadcasting to the world, like YouTube and the pretty or not videos. YouTube, it's gone to other platforms over the years.
Yes.
But you found a lot of what girls are doing with social media is interacting with the same people that they might see at school or in their neighborhood.
Correct. They are primarily communicating with friends, with people that may have gone to school with them that have since moved, that they want to stay in contact with. This is how young people are communicating with each other. And so much of what they're doing is within smaller circles of friends, people that they know. And I think that's really important. And the data and some of the research across explorations into social media and this demographic of adolescent girls or tween girls is demonstrating that. They're not engaging in a bunch of what we might consider to be high-risk behavior. They're having fun with their friends. Yeah.
The girls you talk to also talk about potential negatives of being on social media. A lot of adults certainly worry about cyberbullying.
Yes.
And I thought it was fascinating. Two different girls you talked to had very different. One said, yeah, cyberbullying, way worse than in-person bullying because you can't get away from it. One's like, no, in-person bullying, way worse. You just delete that and forget about it. Interesting, different attitudes toward how we deal with bullying on social media.
Yes, and one of the difficulties of this as well is what we as adults might perceive to be bullying, that's a Tuesday for girls, right? Like, it may or may not be perceived that way, and they have individual perspective and ideas on what that feels like. I also think it's so important to note that while cyberbullying can and does occur, it is often happening, again, with people that know each other in real space and real time. And I think it's really crucial to clarify how we have conditioned young girls to relate to one another. When we think about that, it maps so beautifully onto social media use. Things like passive-aggressive behavior, rumor spreading, gossip, silence, character attacks, things like that can move onto social media pretty seamlessly in a way that aggressive behavior in and amongst boy children is very, very different. And we haven't, I don't know that we've really deepened our inquiry into that. We need more research that looks at these gender dynamics of bullying online. Yeah.
I'll say, as somebody in the media, I've probably done and accepted more pitches on the bad stuff, right, of kids online. And it's out there, and you acknowledge that in the book. But again, a lot of the girls you talk to talk about what a positive experience, or at least partially positive experience, it is a way to build community, to build relationships with their friends.
Yeah. That's the thing that makes me so nervous about some of what's going on in the world right now. I mean, Australia has passed this bill that will ban young people under the age of 16 from social media over the course of the next year. And other countries are paying attention to that policy-wise. Do not mistake me. I think we need very clear, open dialogue and discussion with our young people about what social media means to them, how they use it, why they use it. I think there are so many important opportunities and possibilities that come with being able to self-represent. That's something that's so striking to me, is we worry about girls in public space. We worry about who might be looking at them. We worry about things like body image comparison and negative body image. This did not come to us from social media. Social media is like an infant. We don't know what its net negative or positive impacts are going to be. And that's something I want to pay attention to in the long term. Girls have fun online. They create videos. They are coders. They are dancers. They are comedians. They're doing incredible content creation. And they get to be a part of it in a way that I think we forget. Girls helped make social media what it is. So I think it's damaging and indeed dangerous, this idea of policing their behavior to such a degree that we're going to pull them offline. Because what we're saying is then, by virtue of their gender identity, by virtue of their age, they are automatically high risk. And if that's the case, then we need to be having a very different conversation.
Now, mentioning that Australia law reminds me, we're talking about kids 13 and under, technically by terms of use and things like that. They're not supposed to be there.
Sure aren't. Yep. And yet they are. They are. And they are very prolific online. I think that says a lot to the responsibility and accountability that these platforms need to have in regulating those age limits. But it also says something broader about, in particular, what the last handful of years has meant in the midst and wake of COVID. Because this is how young people were communicating when they were pulled out of school. The access that they had to their social networks was primarily through personal devices, or whether family devices or otherwise. And it is true that it is harder to make something like a personal YouTube channel if you are under the age of 13, which also means that a really significant number of the young people, the girls that were making the Pretty or Ugly videos, for example, are using family accounts, are using parental accounts to do that. Certainly finding loopholes, getting past those regulations, because this is the modus operandi of how this generation is connecting with one another. And kind of whether we like it or not, we need to reckon with what that means.
Talking to Kate Phelps from UW-Madison, author of the new book, Digital Girlhoods. I'm going to do a little read from your book here. Popular culture and mass media tell girls to be confident, but not too confident. Be vulnerable, but do not show too much of yourself online. Be authentic, but only in appropriately self-effacing ways. Be pretty, but not vain. Be thin, but not too thin, but certainly not fat. Be smart, but not too smart. Be active, but do not bypass the boys. Be a leader, but in a suitably feminine way. Be sexy, but not slutty. Okay, if I took the word online out there, I bet that would sound very familiar to women of a number of generations
absolutely.
Before social media ever came around.
Yes, absolutely. I think this is not new. Me naming these paradoxes, this set of contradictions that not only girls of a variety of identities and embodiments are experiencing, but this is something that is experienced across the life course for people that identify as female and feminine. And these sets of contradictions are something that have colored the experiences of women and girls in particular for a very long time, especially as women and girls have gained seemingly more political power. I think ideologically we're very on board with this girl power idea. But it's something that we're selling, and we're selling individual empowerment in particular through consumption. We do that through very recognizable brands, and girls are drawn to that. And then we turn right around and we say, wait a minute, this interest in makeup is so vapid, is so shallow. But what? We're laying that bare for girls. We are selling it to them. And then we turn around and disdain that interest, primarily because we've associated it with femininity. I think this sort of reclamation of femininity and what girls are doing online and how they are performing girlhoods is so powerful. There's agency there. There's disruption. There's the creation of new narratives and counter narratives that cuts through some of this, because girls know, they recognize this endless, seemingly endless series of contradictions about who they're supposed to be and how. And the ability to represent themselves on these platforms demonstrate their interests, their depth, their value, what they find meaningful. I think there's a lot to pay attention to. If we're interested in who girls are and what they're doing, they're telling us. We just have to value it enough to look at it.
Looking at it from a grown-up perspective now, in a lot of ways, the arguments we're having about social media are, like you say, the things we were talking about before social media. I and a lot of people were parents in an age where our kids were hitting social media, and I couldn't look back and say, well, when I was a kid on social media,
right,
because there wasn't social media when I was a kid, it feels really dramatically different. How do you split that? How do you maybe bring those two generations together?
Girls are already having really meaningful conversations with parental figures, with caretakers, with stakeholders in their lives, with their peers about privacy, about how they make content public versus private, how they talk about it with their friends. I think we need to give them more credit. And that is a very noticeable pattern of, I mean, I catch myself doing it too, of, well, it wasn't like this when I was a kid. That is a tale as old as time, right? And some of the moral panic behind it. This idea that social media is the Wild West and this totally unregulated space, I think we need to give girls more credit, but also open ourselves up to what girls have to say. I think about one of my interviews, I mean, several of them spoke to ideas around this, but a 12-year-old black girl named Jessie, who really stands out in my mind, had so much energy around this idea of creating a YouTube channel for dance and for doing choreography. She had had a conversation with her mother about what that would look like and had a whole plan because she knew that in order to be recognized for this skill, she had to utilize an online platform. She knew that. I mean, and she's absolutely right. That is the space that we are in. How can we keep this safe in ways that also allow you to experience the benefits of it? Because most of us are using these platforms, right? Like, they're here. So let's figure out how girls can be a part of that and continue to be a part of that.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's so exciting to get to be able to talk about it. And tween girls are awesome. I just want to end it there. Thank you.
Catherine Phelps is the author of the new book, Digital Girlhoods, and a lecturer in the Gender and Women's Studies Department at UW-Madison. Her book analyzes conversations she had with preteen girls about how they use social media and the role it plays in their lives. If you're a parent or a kid, have you had conversations in your family about how you use or shouldn't use social media? Tell us about it. Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. Again, that's wisconsintoday@wpr.org.